Okay, we are in Perek Yudalid, Pasik Yudalid. Yudalid, Yudalid. Chapter 14, Pasik 14 on page 622. Okay, we're learning the process of a person finishing the leprosy. What he has to do, he has to bring the korbanos, he has to bring two kvasim. There are different procedures we learned, but on the eighth day he needs to bring two sheep and kafsa achas, and three asreinim, three tenths of an ephah, a flower offering. He takes it, one he brings a carbon, and he waves it, and so on. So now the Torah says...
I'm sorry, were you here last week?
Yeah, you weren't.
You're not back yet. And I called and said, this is our system, I call back, so I don't...
I was here. My body was here. I don't know where my mind was, my soul.
My husband wants to come because we had the woman's
right.
And I said, don't
tell me you're out of town.
Okay, the pasuk is at length of Lokacha came Adam Asham. So the Cain shechted, slaughtered one sacrifice as an Asham, a sin offering. V'nasen Cain, the Cain takes the blood. V'naser al tenuch ezen amitara yemonis, on the middle part of the right ear. V'al ben yode ayemonis, on the right thumb of the right hand. V'al ben rago ayemonis, on the right toe, the big toe, what's called the thumb toe, or the big toe. So the Kohen takes the blood, and we're going to soon see how he does it. The Kohenim takes the blood, puts it in the middle part of the ear of the person becoming, pure, the guy to finish the leprosy, puts it on the big thumb and on the big toe. So the Kohen, it says like this, what they do is two Kohenim are involved. One takes the blood from the, when they shecht the animal, slaughter the animal, they take the blood in a vessel. Part of it he puts onto the Mizbeach, onto the altar, like all the other sacrifices, he squirted the blood on the Mizbeach. The other Kohen takes the blood in his right hand, okay, pours it into the left hand. So the Kohen is holding blood in the palm of his left hand, and then he dips his right index finger into the left hand where the blood is, and he applies it to the three places on the leper. In middle ear, right thumb, and right big toe.
The person's ear?
Huh? Yeah, but not all the way in. And the middle part of the ear. Not the ear lobe. Most people say it's the entrance into the ear canal. Now, the Mefarshim explain why these three places. Like, what's the significance of the ear, the right thumb, and the right big toe. So explain like this. The Metzora needs to improve because he sinned. That's why he had leprosy. Now he's becoming pure because he did tshuva. So the Torah is telling him like this. You need to behave better. The ear represents the mind because the canal, opens up into the mind, the face. Deed is the thumb, action. And effort, meaning moving forward in life. So the Mefarshim explained, that's why the Torah mentions these three places representing thought, action, and moving forward. So now that he finished the leprosy, he has to start doing tshuva for all these things. Where do you do it? The Pasuk says, V'tov al ha-Kohen, Pasuk Tezayin. Tezavim, 15. V'lokach ha-Kohen m'leg ha-Shamen. Now the Kohen takes in the oil that was given. V'yotak Hal kaf a kohen asmolis, and he puts it on the kohen's left palm. Okay. The tavel a kohen says ba'oya yemanis. Now again, the kohen takes the right finger, min hashem and hashakapi asmolis, which is on the left hand of the person of the kohen. V'izam min hashem in bed boy sheva palm l'chani hashem. So now after the blood is over, he does the same thing with the oil. He takes the oil that the guy brought, pours it into his left hand, okay? He takes the right index finger, and he pours seven times, he squirts the blood, lifnei Hashem. Now, where is lifting Hashem? Westward. Not westward here. Westward, because that is the direction of the Holy of Holies. Because he didn't go into the Holy of Holies, but he was standing where he was standing, and he squirted the blood 7 times. Now, the Medrash says, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, every time he squirted the blood, I mean the oil, I'm sorry, the oil, he had to dip again his finger into the oil. So he like put his right index finger into the oil, squirted it in the direction of west, dipped the finger again into the oil, did it again 7 times. Okay? And from the leftover oil that's on the palm, Yitin HaKayin, okay, and the Gain puts, Al Tanuch Ezen Amitaya Imanis, middle part of the right ear of the man becoming purified, Val Ben Yadi Imanis, on the big thumb of the right hand, Val Ben Ragle Imanis, on the right toe, Al Dam HaOshem, on top of the blood of the Oshem that he already put. And what the Kain did, the difference was that the blood, the Kain did not squirt the blood on the Mizbeach. And in this process, before the Kohen did. But in this process, the Kohen takes the blood, puts it into his left hand, okay, with the right index finger, takes blood, puts it on the middle ear of the right middle ear, right thumb, right big toe. Then he takes the oil that the guy brought, pours it again into his left hand, with his finger he takes and 7 times and squirts, you know, towards the Holy of Holies in the west direction. And then from the leftover oil that he has in his hand, he takes again with his finger, puts it in the guy's ear, right, big a thumb, and right big toe. On top of the blood that's already there. So the guy now had blood and oil in the ear, thumb, and big toe of the right hand.
And why on the right side and not on the left side?
That's the primary thing.
Is this special oil?
Huh?
Special oil?
Well, olive oil.
No,
olive oil. The Torah just said before, because the Torah says he has to bring, on the eighth day, he has to bring the Loga Shaman. The Loga Echad Shaman. The guy had to bring it. Oil in Torah is olive oil. In Torah, the only oil is olive oil.
What about the blood, the remaining blood, he put the oil on top of
it? Yeah. And then when he was done, he washed his hand. I hope. No. No, he doesn't. No.
It's more fun.
They didn't eat it. What are you worried about?
Sorry.
Now, what do you do with still the leftover oil? What's left over, again, on the left palm of the Kohen, Yitin Aresha Mitahed, he puts it on the head of the guy becoming pure, meaning guy that had leprosy. V'chiper Olav HaKohen Lifnei Hashem, and the Kohen atones him for before Hashem. Okay? Now, the rest of the oil that's in the jar, the Torah doesn't say what you do with it. Because the Torah just said you pour oil on the left hand, right? He squirts 7 times west, in the direction of west. Then he puts in the ear, finger and thumb. And then the leftover oil he puts on the guy's head. But the Torah doesn't discuss what you do with the oil in the jar. That was divided amongst the Kayanim, and they used it for food, and they ate it in the courtyard. Meaning it had to be eaten inside the Beis HaMikdash. But that wasn't actually brought as a carbon. That was what belonged to the Kohanim.
They couldn't take it home.
Huh?
They couldn't take it home.
No, it had to be in the court.
This oil doesn't need hechsher?
Olive oil.
If somebody brings it, anybody brings it from outside?
Not that time.
You wouldn't do it now. I mean, why would they do it then?
They used to love each other then.
No, it's a whole different process of oil. I don't want to get into the kashrus world, okay? But today, the oil, the way it's made today, in the various, if it is an extremely complicated system, and many times they use trace ingredients exactly what I read a whole article many years ago. The big problems that oil has, everybody knows in kashrus, that any ingredient, any food that has oil in it needs a hechsher. Any oil needs a hechsher because there's very big problems. Extra virgin cold press olive oil doesn't need a hechsher. Even now they're saying even that should have a hechsher. But leave it as it is. But all the other, because it's very complicated in the things that they put into the tankers and into the barrels and the things to hold it. Years ago, the Mishnah says they squeezed the olives. They're not olive pressing. See, Chanukah, you know, they have the olive press. Okay. That olive oil doesn't need a hechsher. There's nothing in it. Now, from the oil, there are three, if I remember, says Rashi and Chumash, there are three different types of oil. There's initial, what's called virgin olive oil, meaning the first few drops that come out. Okay? That was good for the Meneira. Shemen Zayezach. Over there, the Torah says when you kindle the Meneira, it had to be pure olive oil, meaning virgin olive oil. Those were the first two drops. Then the other oils were used for menachas, for the flower offerings, you know, things like that. This oil didn't have to be the virgin olive oil, the first few drops, but all it was a squeezing an olive. So there are, you know, different calibers of oil, like you have different cuts of meat, right? You have different cuts of oil, so to speak, different pressings of oil. But there was no problem. The guy had an olive press, he pressed the oil, there was no need for hechsher. Today's a whole different world, the way the oils are produced. What? Now we're learning Chumash.
I know, but
can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Okay. Now, he says over here, V'chipet olav ha-kohen. Okay? The kohen forgives him. Now, the Ramban explains in this parsha, including a pasuk coming up, it says three times the expression that the kohen forgives him. If you look in pasuk chaf again, it says v'chiper olav ha-kohen. Here at this pasuk, it says v'chiper olav ha-kohen. You know, the kohen, the pasuk says three times the kohen will forgive him. So the Ramban explains why does the Torah use the expression three times of forgiving. The Ramban says like this: the guilt offering, he brought three things. There was the sin offering, the guilt offering, that the sins that caused him to become a leper. You know, the verbal averus that he did. The sin offering atones for the curses that he probably uttered when he was in isolation. No, he cursed why this happened to him. And then the third one is that the elevation, a meal offering, that can elevate him to become back as part of the Jewish people. The guy is going from isolation to becoming part of the Jewish people. Okay? So one is to forgive him for the sin that caused him to become a leper. The second one is to forgive him for the curses and action that he did while he was in isolation. And the third one was really to get him back to the proper place. And like we mentioned in the past a number of times, forgiveness can do two things. Like you have a mikveh, right? A mikveh accomplishes two things. A mikveh will remove impurity. If somebody's impure, they go to the mikveh to become pure. But then you have a second aspect that a mikveh does. Even if you're not impure, a mikveh will add purification. Like we mentioned, the Kohen Gadol went to the mikveh five times on Yom Kippur. Five times the Kohen Gadol went to the mikveh on Yom Kippur day. He didn't become Tomei five times. Okay? Each time of going to the mikveh was another level of pure, additional purification. So this is what, similar to what the Ramban is saying over here. There were the forgiveness for the sin that the person did, and the last kapara was actually to allow him, now that he was forgiven for all the things he did wrong, the last one was to forgive him and to get him into the place together with all the other Jews. Because kapara Actually, the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, very interesting definition of kapara. It literally means forgive. But the Alter Rebbe explains, it's an expression of cleansing. It's an expression of actually cleansing the impurity of the sin. And therefore, the Ramban explains, the Torah is using it here three times. Okay, now that the guy finished this process, no, we didn't finish this process. Then the Kohen does the Korban Chatos, and again, this is the third level of forgiveness, what the guy does. Then he shechts the Korban Eila. Then the Kohen brings the elevating offer, the Eila, and the flower offering to the Mizbeach. And then the Kohen purifies the person. This is the normal procedure of a person that became leprosy. Okay? He finished the leprosy, he comes to the Kohen, like we learned before, he takes, you know, the grass and the tree, you know, the cedar branch, and he does the process. On the eighth day, he brings these three karbonis. He brings three karbonis, okay? An asham, chatas, and an eila. And he brings 3/10 of an eifa. This is the normal procedure. Now the Torah says, what happens if he can't afford it?
Yeah, that's a lot of animals.
Yeah. But like I said before, if you can't afford it, you don't sin. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, to sin was expensive.
You can't do the time, don't do the crime.
Yeah, you don't do the time, don't do the crime. You know, the truth is, think about it. A guy had to make a sin offering. It was very expensive to sin, so a guy knows that the consequences are a lot of money. He wouldn't do it. Okay? But here the Torah gives an allotment for somebody who's poor. And if you think about it, this shows an unbelievable kindness from Hashem's side. This is a person who caused fights. Leprosy comes from Lashon Hara. He's a person who caused fights. He caused separations between people. He's put into isolation. Okay? The Gemara says, as we learned already, a leper is considered dead. He's considered like a dead person, completely alone in isolation and everything. And now, the Torah gives him an opportunity. Even if he can't afford it, the Torah says, you know what? Well, you're going to make your life a little bit easier. You could bring a cheaper carbon. No, if you think about it, it's Hashem is very nice. He's a nice guy.
Oh, I have a question.
What?
How about if he's in isolation during Yom
Kippur? No.
He keeps all everything?
Well, we learned before that the Torah says there are certain times the Kohen doesn't look. If it's Yom Tov time, a chosin during the week of his marriage. So if it's right before Yom Tov, the Kohen doesn't look. And without the Kohen looking, nothing happens. Okay, now what happens if Imdalhu?
One question.
What?
Before he took two kvasim tmimim and then another kivsabat shnasa. So one of them was.
Zechatas, one, Asham, one, and Ola.
Is this what it says?
Yeah, these are the three psukim, the three kobanis. Yeah.
What happened if somebody didn't want to cure?
He didn't want? He enjoyed his isolation?
No, he didn't want to cure himself. He had leprosy and he didn't go to Kohen to get cured. To do tshuva. He will die. The leprosy will kill him.
I think the punishment of isolation is a worse punishment. The Gemara says there's certain avers, you know, you got killed for. If you killed somebody intentionally, right, you got killed. If you killed somebody accidentally, you have to run to the city of refuge. The Gemara says, in a certain respect, Golus, being exiled, is worse than death. Because it's a living, pardon the expression, it's a living hell. You know, a guy who lives in isolation, what?
Gradually dead.
You're gradually dying, gradually dying. But a guy who's in isolation, I mean, that itself is a punishment. You know what it is? Nobody to talk to. You can't see anybody. You can't talk to anybody. It's really contrary to the whole human nature.
Couldn't lepers talk themselves?
Huh? Yeah, but how many lepers were there? What do you think? There was a gang of lepers?
Maybe.
Lepers gang? Come on.
Leopard
colony.
Blood is sinful people.
No, this is only in the time of the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah, but in that respect also, if you're, let's say you're the man in the house and you're now put in exile, who's there to take care of your family? It can be really... It's very detrimental in many ways.
It's very bad in all aspects.
So people knew the consequences.
Hmm?
They knew the consequences.
Yeah. Listen, the Rebbe once explained, you know, a guy in solitary confinement in prison, right, is a very big torture. The Rebbe once explained, why is there no jail term, jail time, in Torah as a punishment? If you look in the punishments of Torah, there is no mention of jail time. You either get whipped, lashes, right, or you got killed. There's no such thing like today, they convict a person, what is your punishment? 10 years in jail, 5 years in jail, a year in jail. There is no concept of halachic jail as a punishment for a crime. Okay, we find in Chumash, there are cases in Mekoshe Shetzim, the guy that chopped wood on Shabbos, or the guy that cursed God, they didn't know what to do with him. Okay, so they, until God told Moshe what to do with him, they locked him up. But it wasn't as a punishment of the crime. There were certain times, the Gemara says, that there are people that were doing terrible things, and they can never catch him, but they knew they did it, but there were no proof. They would lock him up to keep him off the streets. You know, the Gemara tells in many places there were girls that were nebuch, you know, like mentally retarded, and all the men would have a good time with them. So for the girl's protection, the Gemara says they would lock up the girl, but not as a punishment for a crime. That was for her protection. They would lock her up that, not, you know, terrible things shouldn't happen to her. We don't find anywhere in Torah the concept of jail term as a punishment for a crime. And then I'll explain why. So the Rebbe explained a very interesting, I mean, fundamental concept of Yiddishkeit. A person was born to be constructive. A person was born to be constructive. A person has a mission in life. They have a job to do. They have a time to do it. The X amount of years that Hashem gave them. To put a person in jail, you're basically not allowing the person to function as a proper human being. And therefore, you're not allowing him, as a living person, to accomplish his mission. And the Rebbe said like this. Therefore, either you give the person malchus, lashes, and saying, okay, now go back and live the life that you're supposed to live, the constructive life. Or, sometimes, a person did such a terrible crime that demands capital punishment. The crime is so severe that you lost your opportunity to live a life to be constructive. So therefore they would kill you. And as we know also in Torah, there's no death row. Today, from the time you get sentenced to get killed until you actually get killed is about 300 years. You anyway die from old age by the time they decide to get around with all the appeals and all the things. In Torah law, the day the court ruled death, you got killed that day. There was no monkey business. And therefore the court couldn't make a ruling at night, because they had to hang the person, kill the person during the day. Okay? The court made the ruling in the morning, they immediately took him out to get killed, and that was it. Because it's torture, the terrorist says it's torture, for a person who knows he's dying, to wait around for weeks and months and years or whatever it is. But the terrorist, the Rebbe explained like this, if a person committed such a terrible crime, that they lost their opportunity to be a human being, to be constructive, so Torah says kill him. But to put a person in jail, so to speak, in isolation, where he can't do and function as a normal human being, which is the role of why he was created, the Rebbe said that he can't do. So what the Rebbe was for is, what's it called in English? No. What's the word I'm looking for?
Rehabilitation.
Rehabilitation. Thank you. Oh, you should know. Rehabilitation. The Rebbe's opinion was, take the people, rehabilitate them, and get them back to lead a normal life. But not jail. So, I'm saying, the guy that's living as a leper outside the camp is really It's a very, Teres is a temporary thing. It's 2 weeks. But you can't isolate a person for life. It's actually torture, and the person's not able to function as a normal human being. So, you don't do it. Okay. Yeah, the country clubs. Vimdalhu, it's not the jails of old.
And the guy with the taking $50 million from the people, they put him in jail in his own house and mansion and like
it. Okay, Vimdalhu, and if the guy's poor, Vanyadim Aseges, and he cannot afford this three korbanos. So the Torah says like this: V'lokach keves echad osham l'snuf l'chaper olav. He takes one animal instead of three. So he takes already a third of the animals. V'isod and seilas echad balul v'ashem l'mincha, and he takes 1/10. The other one, the first two guy had three sacrifices with 3/10 of an eifa. This guy has one sacrifice, one animal, 1/10 of an eifa of the flour mixed with oil. The leg shaman and the leg, the amount of oil. And instead of the other two animals, he took shtei seirim, shnei bnei yena, took two turtle doves, or two young pigeons, ashetasi yode that he's able to afford. One is a sin offering. So instead of the three animals, he brought one animal and two birds. Obviously, the birds were much cheaper than the animals. He brings these instead of the animals in the eighth day, like we said before. Al Pesach Hayomed Lifnei Hashem, to the meeting tent of the before Hashem. V'lokach Hakain is Keves Hashem V'Slega Shaman. The Kain takes the sheep, which is the guilt offering, and the jug of oil. V'Heinif Eisim Hakain Tenufa Lifnei Hashem. He did the waving like we learned before in all six directions. The shachat as the keves ha'oshem, the kain shechts the carbon, the animal. V'lokach ha'kain midam ha'oshem, again the kain takes the blood of this animal that he shechted. He puts it al tenech ezer mitar yamanis, in the middle ear, the middle right ear of the guy. V'al ben yodei ha'yamanis, on the right thumb. V'al ben raglei ha'yamanis, on the big toe of the right foot. U'min ha'shem en yitzak ha'kain, from the oil he pours on the left hand of the kain. In other words, basically the same procedure, but instead of three animals, it's one animal and two birds. The kain takes with his right finger, the index finger, from the oil which is on the left hand, and he squirts it seven times in the west direction towards the Holy of Holies. And then the leftover oil on the left hand of the Kohen he takes and puts on the middle right ear, on the middle right toe, on the right thumb, on the right big toe. So again, it's the same procedure as the rich guy. The leftover oil which is on the palm of the Kohen, Yitin Aresha Mitai, puts on the head of the guy, Lechaper Olav Lifnei Hashem, to forgive him. Now he takes one of the two birds, okay, what he's able to afford, and he makes Echad Chatas, one a sin offering, V'Echad Eila Alamincha, one is the burnt offering together with the flour offering, V'Chipa Akein Alamitai Lifnei Hashem, and if he gets the person forgiveness. And then the Torah says like this: Zeis Torah Asher Beinegat Tzaras. This is the laws of a person with leprosy. Asher Leisasi Yodi B'Taharasei, if he's not able to afford the big animals. So this is the final process of a person that has leprosy on the body. After he gets rid of the leprosy, he comes to the Kohen, and we learned at the beginning of the parsha, he takes two birds. And he takes the eighth Erez, and he takes the red thread, and he dips it into the whole procedure. On the eighth day, he brings all these korbanos. If he's rich, it's three animals, 3/10 of an eifa with the oil. If he's poor, one animal, two birds, same process.
It's not the end of the
process. It's the end of the laws of body leprosy. Now we're going to real estate leprosy. By Dabra Hashem, this is more interesting with the houses. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe v'Aaron lemer. Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron saying, just 1 second, let me just see something. It's okay. Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron saying, Ki saveya al eretz Canaan, when you will come to the land of Canaan, Asher ani neisen lachem achuzah, that I'm giving you as an inheritance, v'nasati nega tzaras, I'm going to put leprosy, v'beis eretz achuzaschem, in the home of the place where you're inheriting, of your possession. So this pasuk sounds like it's good news. God is going saying to the Jews, you know, when you come to Israel, I'm going to do leprosy in your houses. The Daskein Malatesa says a very interesting concept over here. He says, number one, you know, in the plagues we just finished reading a few weeks ago, Hashem first put the plagues in Pari. And then he said, I'm going to put it in your animals and your places where you live. Hashem says to Moshe like this, when I punished Pare and the Egyptians, first they gave the punishment to their bodies and then to their possessions. To the Jews, I'm doing it in reverse. I'm going to give you warnings. I'm going to first do it in your houses. If you don't get the point, don't get the message, I'm going to do it on your clothing. You still don't get the message, I'm going to put the leprosy on your clothing. But Hashem says, I don't want to start up with the body of the Jew right away from the beginning. I'm going to do everything else, and if he still doesn't get it by then the only message I could do is do it on your body. There's two opposite opinions over here why Hashem puts leprosy in the houses. Because if you just take the pasuk as is, what does the pasuk say? When you will come to the land of Canaan, that I'm giving you, I want you to know, I'm going to give you leprosy in the houses. So Rashi comments, what is this leprosy in the houses? This is really a bracha. It's a big blessing. Rashi says in the Gemara that the Goyim of Canaan, when they heard the Jews were coming to conquer the land, they hid all their gold. They didn't have safety deposit boxes in the bank. They used to hide it inside the walls of the house. They used to, like, open up, take out a part of the wall, you know, put the jewelry and the gold in it, and then cover it up. So Hashem says, guess what? When you come to Eretz Yisrael, I'm going to tell you, I will give you a bracha. The houses are going to get leprosy. You're going to have to undo the walls. And you're going to find all the treasures. That's what Rashi says from the Medrash. So Rashi says, "Besudahu lahem." This is good that you're getting leprosy, the Medrash says, because the Goyim used to hide the gold and jewelry in the walls of the, you know, during the 40 years the Jews were in the desert. And because they thought, you know, the Jews ain't going to come temporarily, at least we'll hide all our money and maybe one day we'll get it back again. And therefore, this was the good pesura. Okay? Now, Rambam, though, explains that no, this is actually a punishment for Lashon Hara again. But the Torah starts with the houses, and then the clothing, and then the food. And then the person himself. Now, why, he says like this, the pasuk will soon say the expression, the owner of the house. Okay, so it says like this. The house was also selfish. What do you mean the house was selfish? The person said, my house is mine. I don't need to have guests. I don't need to have hospitality. I don't need to lend things to people. It's mine. It's my possession. It's my goods. I don't want to share it with anybody else. Hashem says, you know what's going to happen to your house? You're going to have to tear it apart. Hashem says, such a house is not a Jewish house. So this is the negativity of the opinion that says it's for the sake of terrible things that a person is doing. And the Gemara says another thing. When the guy has to take apart his house, then everybody in the world is going to see everything that he owns. And then the people will see how selfish he really was. He had all these things, like these people hide things in the inner rooms of the house. Now everybody's going to be able to see exactly what the person owned and how selfish he was, and so on and so forth. Yeah.
So this didn't happen until they arrived in Israel.
Yeah. So the Torah says, and Rashi says this in fact, no, Rashi doesn't say, not here, but before Rashi said it. This is only applying when the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael. And the Torah says another thing in this pasuk. Asher ani neitzen lachem la'achuza, that I'm giving it to you as a possession, which excludes the city of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was not given to any tribe to live in. Yerushalayim belonged to every, right? It was God's city. So therefore, the din of leprosy, the Mishnah learns, the din of leprosy did not apply in Yerushalayim.
Nobody got leprosy in Yerushalayim?
The houses. No houses got. And not only that, the Medrash says, from the time the Jews got into Israel until they actually settled the land was 14 years. The Pasuk in Yeshua says, when the Jews came into Israel, it took them 7 years to conquer the land and 7 years to divide the land. When did every Jew get their settled portion in Israel? After 14 years. The fact that the Torah says, the Torah doesn't say, Kisavayo Eretz Canaan. When you come to the land of Canaan, I'm going to make leprosy. The Torah adds, which I'm giving you as a possession. Which means, until you possessed it, until you actually got it, the laws of leprosy didn't apply. So not only didn't it apply in the desert, it didn't apply for the first 14 years that the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael. Huh?
Miriam.
What?
Case of Miriam.
Miriam was not in a house, it was on her body. Miriam and Aaron both, what?
How long she had it?
7 days.
That's it?
That's it. Now, he says like this. The Mefarshim explain that when the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael, it was a holy land, they lived a holy life. Then when individuals sinned, that affected the physical beauty of the house. It happened to get leprosy. But, therefore it only happened in Eretz Yisrael when the Jews were in a holy thing. Like we learned before, leprosy only came in the olden times the Jews were holy. In today's day, when Jews are not holy, even though we speak a lot of Lashon Hara, we don't get leprosy. Now, the Mefarshim explain, one second, leprosy on person and clothing applied in the desert. Like you said, Miriam, right? But houses only apply, because only by houses does the Torah say when you come into Eretz Yisrael. The laws of leprosy, the Torah never mentioned when you come into Eretz Yisrael. So that applied even in the desert. But houses is only in Eretz Yisrael. Uba Shalei Habayis. And the owner of the house would come. He sees, you know, the guy sees something is, funny with the house. It looks funny. V'higed l'kohen lemer, he says to the kohen like this. Kenega nirali b'bayis. Something like leprosy appears to be in my house. And the Gemara learns out, and Rashi brings this down, that even if the guy was a scholar and he knew that it was leprosy, you still have to come to the Kohen. But the Torah doesn't say the guy comes to the Kohen and says, I have leprosy in my house. He has to say, it appears to be similar to leprosy in my house. Okay? So he says like this. One should avoid, the guy was a scholar, he knew it was leprosy in the house. Nevertheless, it's not good, and it's a very important lesson they say, for a person to rule impurity upon himself. Another thing they learned from this concept, that a person in modesty should not be always say, this is the way it is, this is the way it is. He should always say, it appears to me that this is it. So there's two lessons over here. Number one, a person should not proclaim impurity on themselves. Somebody once came into the Rebbe and spoke Lashon Hara against himself. Somebody said the Rebbe something bad about himself. So the Rebbe said to him, you know something? You're a Jew, and it's forbidden to speak Lashon Hara on a Jew. You're a Jew yourself. Don't speak Lashon Hara against yourself. In Halacha, there's a rule. A person who says something bad on himself is not believed. It's completely contrary to civil law. In civil law, if a guy comes to court and says, I committed a murder, they don't need any court cases. They don't need any... They do what they do. In Besdin, if a guy came to court, the Besdin, and said, Besdin, I killed somebody, come, I'll show you the knife, and I'll show you everything that I did, and I'll show you where the body is buried, and they'll show the cops everything. Yeah? Besdin says, sorry, sir. Go home, have a nice day. A person is not believed in Torah law to testify negatively against himself unless if it's a money issues. Now, that I can testify that I owe you $1,000. I can say I owe you, even though it's negative, but... No, it's okay, you can...
I didn't hear something you said. I thought
about. I know. I was saying about money. So you open up.
Unless what? No, you said unless.
Unless if it's monetary issues. If a guy comes to Besdin and says, "I owe somebody $1,000," the law is even if two witnesses testify that he doesn't, he still has to pay it. But outside of monetary issues, if a guy comes to Besdin and says, "You know what? I just ate a nice cheeseburger. I deserve malchus lashes." Besdin doesn't give it to him. They don't believe him. They don't believe him at all. If a guy comes to... It goes even further. If a guy comes to Besdin, he says, I committed adultery with this woman, they don't believe it on himself, but he's one witness about the woman that she committed adultery. Hey, this is a complicated loss. But anyway... So therefore, this is off a little bit, but a person, the Torah says, don't come and say, I have leprosy, my house is impure, I'm impure. You say, it appears to me that there's something like leprosy on my house. In addition to the fact, they say that you should always say, I'm not sure, you know, not to be certain about it. So what happens, this is a very interesting halacha now. V'tziva ha-kohen, pasuk lamed vav. The Kohen commands, upinos habayisti, empty out the house. A guy comes to the Kohen, he says, Kohen, guess what? I think there's leprosy in my house. The Kohen says, okay, first thing, empty out everything in the house. Before the Kohen even gets there. Empty out the house. What's the concept over here? Afterwards, the Kohen comes to the house. If it's leprosy, the house is tamei, but anything in the house would be tamei. Anything in the house would be impure. So Hashem has pity on Jewish money. So Hashem says, you know what? The first thing the Kohen does is empty out the house. Before he even comes to make a proclamation, it is or isn't. And if you think about it, there's another remarkable concept. If the Kohen comes 20 minutes later, yeah, they empty out the house in 20 minutes. What do they have already? Yeah? They empty out the house in 20 minutes. 20 minutes later, the Kohen comes and says, yep, it's leprosy. Yeah? So don't you think 20 minutes ago was also leprosy? It doesn't matter. Until the Kohen rules the house leprosy, it's not leprosy, and therefore whatever you take out of the house is not leprosy. And Rashi says in the Medrash another remarkable concept. What's the big deal if they become impure? You could put it in the mikvah and become pure. It's not a loss of money. The only thing that's a loss of money is earthenware vessels that can never be purified in the mikveh. Okay? So if you think about it, look how kind Hashem is. There's a guy that did leprosy, okay, did all these terrible sins that had leprosy, okay, or the house is getting leprosy because the guy did these terrible avedas. And the only problem would be earthenware utensils, which cannot be purified, which are not that expensive, right? And yet Hashem has pity on Jewish money that it shouldn't become broken, because that's the only way you can purify earthenware vessels is by breaking them. So Hashem says, tell the guy to empty out the whole house. Not to ruin Jewish property of a sinner. So it teaches us, says, how careful we have to be about another Jew's property. And this was a very interesting thing that the Rebbe taught also by example. The Rebbe would sometimes walk out of 770 and see a light burning in a sukkah. Sukkah's time, right? The Rebbe was going home, and by whatever reason, the light in his sukkah outside 770 was on. The Rebbe would turn around to the secretary, whoever it was, and say, it's a shod yedishigalt. Why are you wasting Jewish money? Why is the light burning? For no reason. Yet, when there was an issue of money to need it to be spent to spread Yiddishkeit or whatever, the money was not an option. A friend of mine once showed me an answer he got from the Rebbe. He wrote to the Rebbe two options in the Shabbaton. One was a cheaper option, and one was the more expensive option, but he would be able to put on tefillin with more people. So he asked the Rebbe, which option should he do? Option A, which is cheaper, but not so many people are going to be able to put on tefillin, or option B, which is more expensive, but more people are going to be able to put on tefillin. He showed me the answer from the Rebbe. It was such a sharp answer. Like the Rebbe said, where is your brain to even think to ask such a question? When it comes to doing mitzvah with people, since when is money an object? Well, since when is money relevant? But on the other hand, to waste money, even a cent, is not allowed to be wasted. And this the Torah teaches us here. The sinner, leper, or the house of leprosy, the Torah says, even the only problem would be the earthenware vessels, which are not that expensive. The Torah says, before the Kohen comes, empty out the house first. Then the Kohen will come, we'll deal with it then. By the way, we mentioned, Steingedacht, if somebody dies, there's once a story that a guy died called Nidre Knight in 770 downstairs. The Rebbe came down to Kol Nidre, and somebody handed the Rebbe the Sefer Torah, and he had a heart attack on the spot. So, you know, you have a dead body with thousands of people, a bunch of them are kohanim. You can't have a kohen in the same, room as a dead body. So the Rebbe said then that the doctors and the rabbanim should not rule the guys dead until all the kohanim leave the room. After all the kohanim left the room, they pronounced him dead. No, he was dead on the spot. You know what I mean? But the Rebbe said the Rabbanim and the doctors should not proclaim him dead until all the Kohanim leave. Because now he's still alive. Until he's proclaimed dead, a Jew is alive. Until the house is proclaimed impure, the house is pure. It's the proclamation that makes it impure. And therefore, the Kohen was told to empty out the house. Okay, so now what does he see in the house? He empties out the house. Before the Kohen sees the leprosy, that it shouldn't become impure, everything in the house. And afterwards, meaning after everything is emptied out, the Kohen comes to see the house. Now, what is the leprosy of a house? The Kohen will look at the leprosy. He sees the affliction is in the walls of the house. What do they look like? Shkarudais yirakrakreis, depressed, not mentally depressed. They look deeper. Yirakrakreis eyadamdeis, deep green or deep red. Remember, we learned already, yirakrak is double yorek, which means double green, and adamdam is twice adam, which is red, meaning a very dark green or a very dark red. Umare and shafel min akir, and they look deeper than the wall because of the color. You know, they look deeper than the wall, lower than the wall. So this is what he sees in the house. V'yotza akir min abayis al pesach abayis, the kohen goes out to the doorway of the house. V'hizkir as abayis shivis yamim. He quarantines the house for 7 days. Now, there's two opinions. What does he do? Rashi and other people say the Kohen locks the door of the house that nobody can get in, like a quarantine. Rambam learns that you don't lock the door. The Kohen just says quarantine and nobody goes in, but you don't have to lock the door. The only question is, because the Torah says v'hizgir, normally v'hizgir means you lock it. But here, the Rashi says it doesn't mean lock. Rashi doesn't mean locking. The Rambam says it means quarantining the house, but not necessarily locking it. Okay, now what do you do? V'shava kayim b'yem ha-shvi, the same kayim comes back on the 7th day. V'roi v'nei pasa ha-nega b'kiris ha-bayis. He sees that the leprosy spread. So what does he do? V'tziva kayim, the kayim commands. He takes off the boards that has the leprosy on it. You throw them out outside the city. To an impure place. They actually throw it out into. And it says an interesting thing. The Gemara learns from here. It says, they should do it. Who's the they? The guy, the owner, and his neighbor. And the Gemara says, if they both share a common wall. In other words, if they share a common wall, then the owner of this house where the leprosy was, plus the neighbor. What do you nebuch want from the neighbor? But the Gemara has the expression, Eilu Rasha, Eilu Shcheini. Bad neighbors, bad company. Woe is to the Rasha, woe is to his neighbor. So therefore, not only the wicked suffer, but their neighbors suffer too. What's so funny? Huh? Okay, that's what they have to do.
That's fair.
You have a bad neighbor?
I mean, you good. You have a neighbor that is no good, then they...
Yeah, okay.
It could be that maybe you were supposed to help your neighbor not to be such a bad person,
mm-hmm.
and therefore. Mm-hmm.
Is that what they're saying? No, the Gemara just says if you have a bad neighbor, you're supposed to move away.
Uh-oh.
Oh. Okay, everybody up, put up for sale signs.
When the Kohen went to the house,
yeah.
He wouldn't get Talmud?
No. Because that's why it says he stands outside at the door of the house and he locks it up.
Then he
says it's impure. The Kohen wasn't in the house when he declared it impure.
It's not contaminated, or is it? I mean,
yeah, the house, anything in the house would become tamei, including a person. So the Kohen went al pesach habayis. Well, in this case, he didn't even say it's tamei yet. He just quarantines it.
Because it's tam tzaras on the body is not contaminated. I mean, you shake hands and it's, you don't get it. But in the house, somehow...
No, we learned before that if a leper is in the house, it's also metame ba'il.
No, in the house, but I'm saying not in the house, just...
No, mitzvah avatum. If you gave shalom aleichem to a leper, you became tamei. You weren't allowed to give shalom aleichem to a leper. 7 minutes.